What's up, witches, and welcome to Witch Space. I'm Gemini.
And I'm Scorpio. And today, today we're doing something Gemini wants to do. And I say that because I get, you know, Scorpio did this, Scorpio did that. Nope, this is a Gemini production. And what is it? Well, the last episode, we read Lilith Dorothy's book, Orishas, Goddesses, and Voodoo Queens, The Divine Feminine in the African Religious Traditions. And when we were done recording, Gemini and I were talking, and she was like, hey, how does the divine feminine work in our traditions when we're doing our craft, practicing our craft? And we thought, hey, it would be fun to talk about it on the podcast. So yeah. That's what today is, which is really nice because it's nice to kind of have a month devoted to something like that. The book, I mean, I think all our books, we think about them afterwards, yeah. But do we dedicate another episode that's been inspired by? So this is kind of cool.
Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I think you can start. That way I have an idea of where we're going to go with this.
Okay, well, welcome to the journey then. We've talked a lot about the divine feminine in a variety of ways over the last year or so. We talked about it in the context of Jung when we read his work. I've kind of brought it up occasionally in the context of like parenting. It's been a thing that's been on my mind a lot. Because of the various ways that the divine feminine is present in Greek mythology and in Greek practice, there's so many options available to you. So what I want to start with is I want to talk about a holiday specifically, and then we'll talk a little bit about like the different goddesses. Because one of the widest holidays, festivals that the Greeks celebrated was Thesmophoria. And Thesmophoria was a holiday specifically dedicated to Demeter and to Persephone, and was primarily celebrated by women. When we look at the evidence, it was primarily celebrated by women, and in fact, primarily celebrated by married women. For actual ancient Greek times, this is kind of a big deal because married women didn't have a lot of rights. So the idea that there was this specific holiday dedicated for them kind of gave them some time to like let down their hair and party and have fun and have joy. But also there's something really important about the way the Greeks tied, you know, sort of traditional marriage to fertility, not just of humans, but of their agriculture, right? The wives were the tenders of the grain. And we see that in Demeter's story and in Persephone's story a little bit as well. So the idea that there is the most important holiday that we can study, right? The holiday that is traceable throughout ancient Greece, right? A lot of times we have like, oh, this is an Athenian festival or this is a Spartan festival. Thesmophoria, we can track throughout the variety of city-states, was for women and was for married women, women who probably had like the least amount of rights because everything they did was subservient to their husband. I think that's important. Do you know what I mean? And I think it reminds us that even when women are not respected, even when women don't have rights, even when women are made to be second-class citizens, society recognizes that if women do not have something, that's a problem. And so every city-state was celebrating this major holiday and giving these women this holiday to celebrate, as opposed to like, oh, just here and oh, just there. That, I think, powerfully colors the way you should be looking at the myths from a modern context. To say, okay, yeah, and we'll talk about it in a minute, there are lots of situations where women are not, you don't feel empowered necessarily by the divine feminine. But also, the divine feminine in Greek mythology will claw back some semblance of control, some semblance of power, regardless of where they are put.
So when you said they recognized that they have to give women this space, What do you think, for a society that had no power, what do you think was the thinking behind it? Like, what would happen if they didn't give the space? Like, what did they think would happen with the women if they didn't have this?
We can see historically, when we look at cults of Dionysus, that madness was the thing that we fear about women, that women will go mad. And part of that madness is absolutely sexual control, right? Like, women are going to have sex with whoever they want, and I'm not going to know whose baby it is. That's a problem. But also, when we look at myths of Dionysus, those mad women ripped people to shreds. They killed people. So, you know, as much as it is probably on most days like, oh, well, women can't just, you know, fuck around because we might find out, women also might kill us. They might do it.
Well, there was this feeling that hysterectomy, right? Hysterectomies, the removal of the womb, is that that was what made women nuts. Supposedly women could become crazy. Yeah. Now, another thing that I think is interesting about this festival that I didn't know about, so I'm learning from you.
Yes.
Demeter and Persephone. Why not Hera? Because when we're talking about married women, you would think that Hera would be the head, in, you know, head bitch in charge here, not Demeter. Why, do you know, like, she's excluded completely from this, or?
I guess, yeah, technically. This, when they do festivals, you know, you'll celebrate, like, your local city gods, your personal gods. And the way that the Greeks deal with, maybe, okay, let's start here. The way that the Greeks deal with deity is not uniform. There are personal versions of the gods. So you might have like a Zeus Ketesios, who is Zeus, the god, but he is Zeus of your larder, of the stores of your home. And so you worship him in this much more personal way. Hermes would be, they literally had a Herm out at the front of their property to mark their property. So you have these very personal relationships with gods, but then you have a larger mythological relationship, city-state relationship, festival relationship. The reason this one is so important is because Demeter is the goddess of agricultural fertility, and Persephone is the goddess of the renewal of spring and the death in winter. So for them, I need to be able to eat. I need to be able to eat, and my wife bears my children. She is the fertility of my family. If she is fertile, my lands are fertile. The fertility aspect is super important, and I think that's why you see it everywhere, so that people survive.
Okay. No, that makes sense. It's just when you said married women, I thought, whoop, are they leaving somebody out? But yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
And there is a holiday for Hera and Zeus specifically to celebrate their marriage, which actually happens right around Valentine's Day. It's in February. It's called Theogamia, or literally God marriage, which is a time when people would get married, a time when you would celebrate maybe like an anniversary. That's more to celebrate the actual structure of a wedding, and this is more to celebrate like the fertility aspect.
Okay. So in your own practice now, how do you work with the divine feminine?
That's such a great question, and I love that question. Let's talk about Hera. Let's do some Hera ASMR, guys. I right now work... Okay, so let's start with this. And I'll do like a deeper dive because we're going to do a Gemini Hellenismus update later in the year. The way that I practice now as a mom is so different than the way that I was trying to practice before I was a mom. So it's definitely a little bit more personal. It's a little bit less structured. It's a little bit less reconstruction. I pretty much like primarily work with Hera. I like try to sometimes work with Aphrodite, but it's really Hera. My relationship with the divine feminine goes through Hera. I brought a statuette of her to my birth, right? I called upon her repeatedly during my pregnancy and repeatedly during the early time of, you know, learning to take care of baby Bat. And for me, Hera is a goddess of legacy. Hera is a goddess of what we give to others. in sort of that like queenly sense of like, how do I care for my community? How do I rule justly? And I know that like when you think about the myths, you think about Demeter as mother. You think about Hestia as homemaker. But for me, it's Hera. Right? And it's almost, it's almost too personal. It's almost like too internal to me to be able to explain it. But her relationship with femininity, I think, is so much more reflective of a modern woman's experience, in that there's lots of stories about Hera and her shitty toxic relationship with Zeus, but there's also lots of stories of Hera being a badass bitch and not taking no shit. And there's also lots of stories of Hera kind of being a little bit of a bitch. And for me, she was a figure that I could actually relate to. And I think that, like, I will, as I grow, relate more to Demeter, especially, like, as your children become adults and they start making their own decisions. I can definitely see that relationship blossoming more. But Hera is a queen, and she rules justly, and she rules rightfully, but she's not perfect. And she is perfect because she's a goddess and she can't do anything wrong, right? But, like, she's not perfect. She has moments that are, when we as mortals look at them, you're like, you were kind of wrong. You were kind of wrong. Right? Or like, we can relate to loving a person. I'm not talking about Mr. Gemini, but I am talking about men I have dated in the past. You can relate to loving a person who maybe is not treating you fairly. And I'm going to say some, like, this is so silly because I'm about to be like, I'm going to say some woo-woo shit. I'm on a witchcraft podcast. That's so silly. But sometimes when I talk about, like, having kids, I sound more woo-woo than normal.
Okay.
Having a child, to me, is, like, the most profound spiritual experience that I have ever and probably will ever experience, while also being, like, painfully mundane. And it's almost like the missing link between mortal and divine. And I wanted to go through that experience with a representation of the divine feminine that felt real. Because I think sometimes, and especially on like Instagram or TikTok, we see the conversation about the divine feminine, about like stepping into traditional gender roles, or like letting somebody take care of you. And I don't think Hera ever mythologically is like, yes, I would like to be taken care of. Like, she's out here ruling with an iron fist. She's out here demanding that the rules be followed in a way that I think is important. She's a queen. And I don't, like, I love to bake and I love to be in the kitchen, and I don't have a problem sometimes conforming to a traditional gender role, but I don't want to feel that that's the only expression that the feminine can be. And I think Hera gave me, and gives me, because I still, you know, it's still an active process, gives me the opportunity to straddle the line. Because I think, like, with Athena and Artemis, it's very much sort of quote-unquote traditional masculine skills, right? I'm going to be feminine in the way of, I can do anything, and I can play the boys' game. And then when you look at Demeter and Aphrodite, it's more like traditional feminine. I'm going to fit into the gender roles. I'm going to be a mother. I'm going to be a sex object. Hera, for me, is that middle space.
What about Athena? Have you ever worked with Athena?
Athena is the reason that I am Hellenic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about Hera in a way that, when, and again, I'm not Hellenic, but, you know, from what I've read, I think of Athena when you talk about like that middle, mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, Athena kind of bends a lot of the rules as well. So that's why I'm just kind of curious now. So, yeah. So tell me about that. So how did she get you into being Hellenic?
And- in in like the most...
And then answer why Hera, not yes. Athena.
Athena got me into being Hellenic in the most Odysseus way possible, where she just kind of like pops up. She's just like, hey, how about you do this stuff? And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, totally, 100%. Let's go, girl. But Athena, I have always related to and worked with through the concept of like intelligence. Right. And that is, I think, why I don't see Athena as being a middle ground, but much more being on sort of like, oh, this is the traditional. She's like being a woman in a masculine field because it's like she's a woman in STEM. That's what she is.
Yes.
And having been a woman in STEM.
I was going to say, and so are you.
There's not a lot of room for womaning. It's not. When I was doing woman in STEM, this is such an episode that I was not emotionally prepared for. I thought I was going to do this differently, and I'm not, and fuck it. Being a woman in STEM is like almost, for me, it was like almost non-gendered. It was so cerebral and so intellectual and so like knowledge-based that it literally, I was so separated from feminine or masculine in that headspace. And like, yes, the things that you hear about women in STEM happened. There were dudes who were like dismissive of me because I was a woman, but I was so, I was so laser focused that it wasn't about that.
Okay.
Working with Athena was and is for me working with my relationship to my brain.
Okay.
She is about skill. She is about craft. She is about strategy. And whether you're applying that strategy to a traditionally feminine skill of weaving or cross stitch or whatever, or a traditionally masculine skill of war, it's the laser focus that I relate to more than it is the womanhood.
Got it. That makes sense.
It took me a minute, but I got there. I think we have to be honest when we look at Hellenismos and accept the fact that there is a lot of... It's a very masculine world that they lived in. Men were the rulers. Men were in charge. And so even the goddesses are in some ways less than in some of the myths, or treated unfairly, or have bad things happen to them, et cetera, et cetera. For me, that makes it more accessible, because for me, having been through difficult things as a woman, I can go and say, well... Well, people looked at Aphrodite and didn't believe that she could be a war goddess, but she was. And people looked at Athena and didn't think that she could be everything that Athena is, and she was, right? Artemis looked at her father and said, I will never marry, and she got it. That could have been a story of him forcing her into a marriage, but she didn't. He said, yes, you can remain youthful. Right, there is so much power, obviously, in the divine, but there's so much power for me in being able to look at aspects of the divine that I can relate to that aren't inaccessible. And I mean, like coming as a raised Catholic, right? Like the idea of the Christian God is so inaccessible. And on purpose, right? On purpose, inaccessible. But I think a lot of us come to paganism to access the divine. And this is very accessible for me. And I think it's different for me coming from raised Catholic, inaccessible deity, moving into paganism, accessible deity. You don't have that background, right? Like first of all, could you access deity the whole time? Were you just like 5 years old out here accessing the divine?
Okay, well, yeah, no.
What?
So I'm thinking, you know, when we talk about deity, there are so many levels to deity. So we could talk about the supreme whatever entity, right? And then we can talk about gods and goddesses. So when you say, you know, could I access the divine? In Espiritismo, yes, that's the whole point. The whole point is to try to learn about yourself as much and to understand that when you're dealing with spirit or whatever it is, that's the divine. You are the divine. Everybody is the divine because everybody has that in them. So you are working with yourself to try to, I guess, I can't think of another word than to say to open up your third eye so that you can be more intuitive, so that you can access those parts of yourself that you need, so that you are able to access ancestor or to access your spirit guides. So in that sense, yeah, since I was a kid, I knew that I had guides and I had, so Gemini's just making her face. I'm not really sure.
So, that's fine. I'm just a little jealous.
And that was always, no, because then with that came a bunch of things that just scared the crap out of me. So, you know, I mean, when they're telling you, you're never alone.
Yeah.
Right. And you're kind of like sitting in your room, just kind of chilling and you're like,
yeah, because like you can't access like metaphorical thinking until you're like 7 or some shit. Damn.
Yeah, so it can be weird.
With that understanding, how do you relate to the divine feminine through Espiritismo?
So Espiritismo is not going to have a divine feminine because Espiritismo, there are no genders. I mean, there are genders because we go inside of bodies and bodies have gender. We have decided what the genders are going to mean. I'm saying on Earth. I'm not saying Espiritismo decides. I'm saying on Earth kind of decides that there is one being that's going to be able to give birth and there's another one that's going to be able to assist in that, right? Humanity has said, this is feminine, this is masculine, and this is how this is going to work, you know. And it still does work like that, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that you don't necessarily have to be a female to give birth, right?
Uh-huh.
Because,
yes.
Right? And you don't have to, so that's not, I'm just talking about like mechanically, like the science behind it. There is one person that has this, one person that has that, and you're going to be able to make babies that way. But when it comes to Espiritismo, when we think about, like my father passed away, okay? The term they use, because we have to go back to Espiritismo story, we have to go back to language, right? There is gender in Spanish, there's gender in French, right?
Yeah.
We don't do that in English, right? That's the table. But in Spanish, it's la mesa, like things are gendered. Okay. So just like we used to do in English when everything was he was the default, right? There, it's he is a default in Spanish in a lot of cases. That's changing, but I'm just saying,
yeah,
right? So once my dad passes away, he becomes my hermano. We are all hermanos, which is saying brother, right? We're all brothers. That's not to say that when we pass on, spirit becomes male. No, that's not what they're saying.
Right.
You know, it's just that's the thing. It's like you have no gender and now you all become, we're all one family of non-gendered beings. And then gender comes when we incarnate and then we will identify with a gender, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So to say that there's a divine feminine, there isn't a divine feminine. Even God is not gendered, right? The supreme being, Eloi, whatever, it's not gendered. So, you know, I didn't really connect as a kid to the feminine divine or anything like that. There were genders in Santeria, right? So, and here's something that also when I got into Wicca and witchcraft, I think I carried over from seeing my grandmother. I understand that, you know, with Wicca especially, you work with a god and a goddess. And I've always had a difficult time working with the god.
Mm-hmm.
And I was once told, you know, you need to put a little bit more work into working with your god. And I was like, why? There are, you know,
I'm sorry, by like another practitioner? Just,
yeah.
Boo.
Right?
Ew. Don't ever tell anybody that, guys. That's weird.
that is weird because it's just like, I don't want to. So I work with more female deities than I do male, right? But I'm also the person that's like, I don't need to go to a male doctor. Like, why can't all my doctors be either, you know, either non-binary or female? Like, why am I going to...
agree.
That sounds terrible.
No, it doesn't. I'm a big fan of non-men medical professionals.
You know, huge fan. I don't want to do it. I mean, obviously, if there's an emergency, I'm not going to say, let me bleed out in the emergency room.
Yeah. No,
please, somebody help me. But what I'm saying is that when I have a choice, like, I literally, the things I look for are, where did you go to school and what's your gender? And then I'll make a decision based on that. So for me, working with feminine energy, I mean, the only feminine energy that I worked with as a kid really was the energy of my ancestors or the energy of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And my family's, my mother's side is very matriarchal. I mean, incredibly matriarchal. Her great-grandmother controlled everybody in the family, and it just kept going that way, where it's like, then my great-grandmother controlled everybody in the family. You know what I mean? It's just the way things were. It was just always went to the women. So... even though I didn't have that in my spirituality, I had that in my home. You know, my grandmother was the president of a Latina feminist organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was on a float for the Puerto Rican Day Parade, and it was her organization that had it. So it's like, so the divine feminine were live people to me. You know, I wanted to be like my grandmother. Like, I thought my grandmother was really cool. I would see her go to work. Most people that I knew... my generation, grandmas were staying home and baking and cooking.
Yeah.
My grandmother didn't know how to cook. She didn't know how to bake. She liked sweets. She had a sweet tooth. So it was the women. It was, I wanted to be a healer like my great-grandmother. You know, people came to her and she would heal them. And I don't mean heal them like woo-woo healing. I mean, like, she was a midwife, so.
Oh, she was a doctor. Got it.
So she.
She was a real doctor.
So people would come to her literally for like, I have a cyst, I have a this, I have a that. And she was like, okay, I got you. So for me, I didn't want to be a doctor, but I did want to be able to, because, you know, there was also the spiritual side to her.
Yeah.
So to me, I kind of wanted to be able to help people. And my grandmother and great-grandmother helped people. My mother became a social worker. So those were my feminine divine when I was growing up.
First of all, that's sick. That's so fucking cool. And I love that. And I'm jealous of you. And I think that's really beautiful. And I think that anybody who's listening who's like, oh, I resonate to that story. Like, I think you have the right to honor that in this context. Because again, I have a lot of opinions on like this sort of manufactured idea of the divine feminine that we're seeing all over everything. And this like weird trad wife resurgence where people are like becoming more traditional. The idea of just being like, okay, I'm going to honor the women around me. I think that that is such a powerful interpretation and manifestation of the idea of the divine feminine. And it's something that maybe I would, like, I wish I had that looking back of being like, oh, you know, I felt that in my family, but maybe something that I could be looking into. Like, that would be really interesting to do, to be like, how can I trace the divine feminine through my own family history?
And I think I went in that direction simply because, you know, when you're told as when you're little that everybody is spirit and everybody has gifts and everybody has, so you, that's what I think you just naturally do. You just naturally look at, you know what I mean? Because like I've said, like I could see things. I can see things. And it's comforting when somebody says, oh, your aunt does that too. And then you can go to her and say, well, what do you see? You know, and not to sound like the Sixth Sense, but she used to see dead people. You know, she did. Like if somebody passed away, she's like, they're going to come. They're going to come. I'm going to see them. And she would get super upset because obviously she's grieving.
Right.
You know, like I said, my father's one of 16 and they're not all alive. And the ones that have passed, who used to see them? Her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she passed away. But you know, so when you have that, then you start looking at spirit differently because you realize spirit is all around us.
Right.
And if there are no gods, then where else would I look for the divine feminine? You know, where would that be? What does that look like? I wasn't really allowed to study the different orishas. So I couldn't even say, okay, so yeah, I really started worshiping. I just stayed with stories and I stayed with names. But since I knew that in my household, my mother would have flipped, I just didn't. And again, I didn't have the internet to look stuff up, to come back from my grandmother's house and go, ooh, and like get on my tablet mm-hmm. or something and look this stuff up. So it was just kind of like whatever they told me stayed and everything else just went. So it wouldn't be till later. And I had difficulty with the whole concept of deity mm-hmm. because of espiritismo. So just because I don't have like the trappings of a traditional religion to kind of have to fight through, I did have to go, God and goddess, huh? What does that mean? And, you know, when you realize that for some, not every witch, but for some witches, they really are in a way just like another example of ancestor mm-hmm. or, you know, some sort of, you know, guide. And you look at it that way, and you read their mythology knowing that they are gods and goddesses, but there is only one actual creator. And then there's these different pantheons. That's when I started saying, okay, I can get behind this. This can kind of make sense for me. You know? Mm-hmm.
I would love to talk more about your transition into Wicca and I guess like going from spirit has no gender to working primarily with feminine deity, right? What did that look like? Why do you think it happened? How do you feel about it?
I think there's a song. I like being a girl. Is that a song? Like, I feel like it's an old song. I kind of feel like it's like a Jane Russell back there singing it or something like that. Somebody from the 40s or 50s. That's where it comes from. I liked being a girl. I have always been very girly.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, though, even though my family itself was, I guess for the time, progressive, especially in a Latino household, my father wasn't the, you know, getting home from work, where's my dinner kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. it was always impressed upon me that he wasn't helping my mother with housework. This is his house, too. And everybody's working in the house, including me. I had chores. Everyone has chores because we all live here. So it wasn't like that. But I just really enjoyed being a girl in a family where I saw that women had the louder voice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not in a domineering way, but just the, so that's how it is, right? Like, this is the person who's making all the decisions. This is the person who makes most of the decisions, not all the decisions. So when I came into Wicca, one of the things I liked was that for the most part, you got to see, I mean, it's supposed to be equality, right? The god and the goddess, mm-hmm. and you have all these different things. But I just saw so many myths about the goddess. I just saw so many different goddesses. And maybe it's just what I was looking at. But the god always seemed to be second banana. The god seemed to be thrown in there because somebody wanted the god to be thrown in there. Uh-huh. Gerald Gardner. I don't know. But that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Like when I was reading stuff, it just felt like I wanted to hear the women. And I think it's just because that's how I am, you know?
Yeah.
I think that you can express your gender any way you want. But for me, it's like nothing makes me happier than putting on makeup and having my nails done. And, you know, it's what I like. But I also like the strength of it.
Yeah.
That people see that as a sign of weakness, right? I've heard people say to me, wow, like your nails are so long, that doesn't that feel like it could be a detriment? And I said, do you have any idea how strong these are? I open packages with this. I could take out your eyes.
100%. Yeah.
Right? Like, And that's the thing that people don't get. Like, oh, if you break a nail, I said, try to break these. Like, seriously, try to break these. Right? Technology's gotten really good. Yeah. Like, I don't think people realize women have weapons on their hands when they have long nails, especially when they're stilettos. So to me, that I've always felt there's a lot of strength in looking feminine and being feminine. You know, men get up and they walk out of the house looking any old way. You have no idea what some people look like. Like, when you have makeup on, that's your armor, right? You're ready to go out to the day and do whatever you have to do. So it wasn't that hard, just because there was no gender, to attach myself to the feminine divine was kind of easy, because that's where I wanted to be. That's where I was happy that in this life I was female.
Yeah.
I was born female, identify as female, and it felt so comfortable and so wonderful to be there that I always kind of looked at, like, my philosophy classes. I had to take the philosophy of the feminine, and I had to always look at all this. So to me, it just made more sense that I would want to gravitate towards deity that represented that, right? We had a whole conversation, an episode about the Morrigan and how the Morrigan is way sexualized. And so what I'm about to say is not about sexualizing her, but I don't think the Morrigan and her sisters are ugly, right? There's beauty there.
Yeah.
And the beauty part of it is the strength they have, the confidence they have in themselves, right? I think that's what makes a woman really beautiful. You know, when she is standing somewhere owning her shit, I'm sorry, you're going to stare.
Yeah.
Because you're like, damn, that's beautiful. You know, it's the power. And I think that's what draws me to the divine. You know, I like to see, and I don't mean power in that I'm going to smite you down, I can kill you, I can do this. Even when we talked about Oshun, right? That feeling of, she can just calm you. Wow. To just be in her presence and just feel that calmness. You know, everybody's got their own powers. To me, it was just easy. And again, I think it came from...
I completely understand.
Yeah. Okay.
You're talking about this, and I am thinking about Hera, and I'm thinking about... I made a comment to a coworker the other day that, like, I'm not a fighter, I'm a poisoner. Women didn't win the right to be aggressive and angry. Right? Like, we have the right to vote, but we didn't win the right socially to be aggressive and angry. The optics on that are bad. I'm not a fighter, I'm a poisoner. Right? If you're going to start shit with me, I'm going to handle it like a woman. And I think in the same way that, like, you saw female deity and was like, I love being a woman, I want to be a woman, right? Like, I want to work with the women. For me, Hera is the divine embodiment of a woman who can read the room.
Mm.
Right? And even when we look at her myths of, like, I'm going to make this man crazy, or I'm going to ruin this woman's life because she slept with my husband, like, yeah, that's how women dealt with these things for a long ass time. Right? Even the divine couldn't just go down and be like, bitch, why are you sleeping with my man? Right? And, like, you shouldn't. Female solidarity, we should just dump the dude. But, like, point stands. My desire for, like, people to have appropriate etiquette and my weird encyclopedic knowledge of, like, social rules is why I see, is why one of the reasons I gravitate to Hera so strongly is this idea that, like, she is a woman who knows exactly how everything is supposed to run, and she can play it like a fiddle. She's the queen for a reason. You're like, you want to sleep with Hera? Oh, look, she's beautifully laying out there for you. It's a cloud. Right? like all of her myths and stories, I resonate with so much as a woman who is, like, deeply non-confrontational but also angry.
So two things that I want to say about that. When you said, you know, we should go after the man, not the woman, female solidarity. I think that's why we go after the woman.
Yeah, because, like, how could you do that to us? Yeah.
Right. It's like, look, I expect this from a guy. I don't expect you to do this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's why I think women get so mad. It's like, I think it hurts more to think that a woman did this to you than that the guy did something to you, because it's like, you shouldn't be doing that. And it makes me think about how women navigate the world.
Yeah.
And why I think people are, they make jokes about how much more dangerous women are, but they are, because they have to, they've taken so much shit that to get away with stuff, we had to find really clever ways of dealing with people.
I couldn't have a knife or a gun in most of the time in history.
Yeah.
Did you know that oleander is poisonous? Did you know that daffodils are poisonous?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you grow in your garden, Grandma?
Oleander? Really?
Yes.
I just showed her one of my tattoos. Yes, oleander. Yeah. Yeah, what are you growing?
What are you growing in your
garden? Why are you growing it?
Do you know what bitter almond tastes like?
Most people, I'm going to say no.
Actually, nobody does, because we no longer eat bitter almonds. It's actually a different type of almond than the almond we eat now. But point stands. What is it? Arsenic, cyanide, one of those two?
Yeah.
You know, it's... I think that it is so valuable to have a narrative and to have a myth for women who do not conform to quote-unquote traditional womanhood. For me, and I grew up very tomboy, right? Like, I did not align with femininity for a very long time. I am very aligned with sort of like traditional gender roles right now, right? I'm doing a lot of parenting. I'm doing a lot of baking. I wear a lot of dresses. But I still feel in between, right? I may be doing the things that are traditional gender roles, but I don't necessarily think the things that are traditional gender roles. And so for me, it's very nice to have somebody who I feel like is both. It's very nice to work with a deity that I feel like is both. Hera is a poisoner, but Hera is not Aphrodite, right? She's hot, and she'll trick you with her hotness, but that's not her specific bag of tricks.
So on more than one occasion, I have been told by people, and the person who says it to me the most is my husband now, which I think it's funny. He's like, you got a lot of like a guy, like you got a lot of guy things about you, you know?
Yes.
And I say to him, no, I have a lot of woman things in me, because you have to realize the person that I'm told constantly that I'm like is my grandmother, right? When I'm angry, my mother would say to me, okay, Teresa, calm down, right? And that would snap me out of it. Teresa's my great-grandmother, because she says something about your eyes. Like, she goes, your great-grandmother would get like, your eyes would get wide. It's like, you're going to go attack. I've always been the person who, you piss me off. You coming for me? You want to come for me? You want this? You know? Mm-hmm. So that, and I think that throws people, because they're like, well, that's not ladylike. And you very much are feminine. So why are you being like this? And I'm like, because these are the feminine role models I've had.
Yeah.
My grandmother, my great grandmother were not taking shit from anybody. And my mother doesn't take shit from anybody. So you're telling me these are the three women that were in my life. This is how they act. You know, my grandmother would come home, all 4'9" of her. I'd go to her house. Every Sunday we went to my grandmother's house, and she would be there with like this big pipe, like sitting in this big chair, like talking. And when you think about old TV shows and old movies, because, you know, I mean, I've loved old stuff since I was young. It was always the guy, right?
Yeah.
Bring Papa his slippers, bring Papa his pipe type of thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Nobody smokes pipes anymore. Why not?
Anyway, smoking is bad for you. Don't smoke. That's why.
No, don't smoke. But pipes were cool looking.
Get the bubble pipes?
yeah, we can get bubble pipes. But so this is what I was watching on TV. And then I come to my grandmother's house, and who's the person with the slippers and the pipe? Mm-hmm. My grandmother. It's a woman. So I think that I've always had a lot of both things, but I'm like, no, like I almost want to like say we should just stop that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that, oh yeah, sometimes I'm like a guy. No, I am like a woman. I am like a woman who was never told a woman couldn't do that. So if you don't tell a woman,
yeah,
then how do they grow up?
And I think that's part of why this conversation was so interesting for me to have, because I don't necessarily want to have a conversation about, like, the concept of the divine feminine, because I think that the idea of the concept of the divine feminine is kind of bullshit, right? Like, to get on here and for both of us to be like, this is how the divine feminine is supposed to exist in a witchcraft umbrella, and you need to, you know, align with specific aspects of that. Like, the beauty of this conversation is the two of us expressing our own relationship to femininity, and then through that, our own relationship to the divine. And I think that that's also part of the reason why people come to paganism and witchcraft in the first place, is to have your own relationship with things. And I guess for me, I encourage everyone listening to really remember that these are personal journeys, and that this is a personal relationship. Even if you're being sort of very formal with the divine, it's still your relationship with the divine. And, you know, there might be a witch out there listening being like, I have a really strong relationship with Artemis because I do not conform to traditional feminine gender roles, and that's really powerful and important to me, and I can still be a woman and not be perceived as traditional. And that's amazing, and I love that, and I want to hear about it, right? Somebody might be like, oh, well, I relate really strongly to the idea of there being no genders in spirit, right? Like, that's also great. This concept, and I think it's something that I started seeing when we were reading Orisha's Goddesses and Voodoo Queens, is like, just putting it together like that, you see the difference. Even in goddesses that are like kind of, that might have similar overlaps or that might be related in theme, like Oshun and Yemaya, they're different. They're unique. Their relationship with femininity is not prescribed. And I don't want femininity to be prescribed. I want to be able to come on here and say, I love Hera and I'm down bad for Hera and I constantly want to work with Hera, and have the next person be like, okay, I want to work with Demeter. And we're both like, yeah, woo, let's go.
You know, I think if the one thing I guess I want people to take away from this is, don't question why you want to work with a particular feminine force. Go for it. And remember this. Everywhere, not just in this country, there are all these laws pertaining to women. All these things that they want to do. Aren't all these laws for men? And people are like, well, that's right, because men are in control. Are they? I feel that the one creature, to call it something, that the world fears the most is women. It's just, how can we find a way to fuck with them every single time? There's a lot of power in that. So I think instead of feeling like, why are we coming under attack? Go, damn right we're coming under attack. And you know what? They should be afraid of us.
Yeah.
So I got to find that song. I know there's a song that goes, I like being a girl, and I can't think of
And when what Scorpio it is, finds it, we'll post Instagram. It for you guys.
And it's some really corny, like, 1940s song, too.
I would love for anybody who wants to reach out and tell us, you know, tell us your vibe. Tell us who you're working with. Tell us how you relate to the divine feminine as a concept, because it's more fun when it's personal, and it's more fun when we get to be ourselves in our practice. And if you're seeing all of those Instagram ads of like conventionally attractive blonde women being like, you need to align with your feminine archetype, maybe you do, or maybe you just need to like be yourself.
Yeah. I think that's the main thing. And especially if you start reading the mythology of all these different goddesses, you know, there's so many different types of goddesses that look all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
And act all sorts of ways. And, you know, who really calls to you?
Yeah.
Or not. But
that is a topic for another episode.
Yeah. This was good. I wasn't sure where we were going to go with this. Because especially when you said the divine feminine, and I was like, uh-oh. Because I knew the question about, so, and in Spiritismo, and I was going to say, well...
No, I think this was great. I'm just down bad for Hera. I just love her so much. And it's nice. It's really pleasant to reflect on it and be like, I have a really good relationship with deity right now. And like, I don't know, 13-year-old Gemini didn't have that.
Look, let's face it. The more you do something, the deeper the connection is going to get, period.
Yeah.
So why should 13-year-old Gemini have the connection that you have now?
No, not like in a bad way, but it's just, it's nice to...
Oh.
It's nice knowing that she would have wanted this.
On that note, this was fun. This was good.
Yeah.
Definitely let us know.
Please. What you send us some messages. I'm nosy and interested.
Yeah, it is interesting. Maybe at some point, if people want it, we can do like a table talk with some folks on this. Because, you know, it is a curious thing because you always wonder. I remember I interviewed a band once. This is not witchcraft related, but it was, I don't think everybody was female, but I think like the lead singer and a couple of people were. And I said, so what female artists inspired you? And she said, why do they have to be female? Why couldn't I have been inspired by like a male band? And I remember thinking, ew. Like, your energy is just ew.
Yeah.
Because for me, of course, there are, you know, male role models of a lot of things.
Yeah.
But again, for me, it's like, oh, I'm so excited to be this. Like, you know, of course I can point to women in the past that whatever. So for her to say that, I was just like, ew, you. Okay. Couldn't end the interview. I really wanted to. I was like,
Yeah. Yeah, this has been awesome. And I love it. And I would love to hear more. And if you guys want to hear more, you know where to hit us. Instagram, witchspaceco, or our email, witchspaceco@gmail.com. Thank you so much to our audience for letting us do this. Thank you for listening to our podcast twice a month. And we love you guys, and you're the best. And if you want us to talk about something, reach out, let us know. You know, we always want to hit topics that you guys are interested in. Thank you, of course, to Conwin Moore for our amazing intro and outro music. And remember, if you're following the moons,
you're following us.